Friday night edition of After Hours here on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you. My producer for tonight's program, Blake Schneiders. We've got a lot to get to on the show tonight. A couple of big Chiefs news and notes. One free agent signing, one re-signing, one that I honestly did not anticipate coming to fruition. A couple of other news and notes surrounding the Chiefs and NFL free agency. Big news dropped about a half hour ago that I can't wait to get into. Royals are inducting someone into the Hall of Fame, into the Ring of Honor. So that's going to be fun to talk about on the show. I also will at some point get on my soapbox. Anybody who is familiar with me or has listened to me do a show, probably ever, any radio show I've ever done, I somehow find it very, very easy to work in the fact that I am an Iowa fan. Iowa basketball fired their head coach today after 15 years, so I'm sure I will discuss that at some point on tonight's program. And of course, we'll get into college basketball. KU losing last night against Arizona. Mizzou's in action right now. As we speak, Mizzou is getting ready to tip off against the Florida Gators. Mizzou, I mean, they're going to be without Mark Mitchell tonight, so they might have a bit of an uphill climb for this one tonight, taking on a really, really good Florida team. They're a team that is on bordering along the one seed line as of right now. They're the number four team in the country. They're 27-4. They might be battling right now with another SEC team or two for who is going to get maybe that third or fourth one seed spot, because right now Auburn and Duke kind of have the top two one seeds locked up. So a lot to get to on tonight's program. I kind of mentioned again, starting out tonight, tip-off was scheduled for 6 o'clock, but we all know how that works nowadays. I don't know if you're like me. One of my biggest pet peeves, one thing that drives me crazy is with sporting events nowadays, where they're like, the game is going to tip off at 8, 7 Central Time. 7:15, 7:20. Nope, game's not going to tip off till 7:23. Ah, Chiefs going to kick off at 3:30 p.m. 3:41 is when kickoff actually occurs. Just folks, push it. Push it 15 minutes. Make it a 3:15 start or 3:45 start. Make it a 6:15 or a 7:15 tip off. Don't tell me 6 o'clock and then make me sit there and watch your extra programming for these guys that are sitting in studios that nobody really wants to listen to because they want to watch the game. 913-586-7965. Talking about the Kansas City Chiefs, two little interesting notes for Kansas City today. One is a re-signing that I didn't see coming. Kareem Hunt is coming back to the Chiefs on a one-year deal. According to Jeremy Fowler of ESPN, that is a one-year contract worth up to $2.5 million. I don't know what the base pay or the guaranteed money on that is going to be, but with incentives and escalators and other things, it could reach as high as $2.5 million. So now you look at the Chiefs, presumably right now have a full running back room. You've got Isaiah Pacheco coming back off the injury last year. Kareem Hunt is back. They signed Elijah Mitchell earlier this week. So the question arises, do the Chiefs still take a running back in April in the NFL draft? The answer to me is still absolutely yes. If there's any year for you to take a running back, this is the one. When you get to Green Bay in late April, there are anywhere between, I believe, 12 or 16 running backs in this draft class. 12 is probably on the safer side, I would say, the more likely side, that could be starting running backs in the NFL at some point in their careers. This running back class is as talented a pool at one position as we've seen in the National Football League in quite some time. When you look at Ashton Jeanty, Omarion Hampton, who myself and many others are very intrigued by the possibilities of Omarion Hampton. When you look at Devin Neal at Kansas, when you look at, I believe is Gibbons, I can't remember his first name, that from Kansas State, he had a really impressive combine. Caleb Johnson out of Iowa, you know, Scadaboo, and so many other, Quinshon Judkins and Travion Henderson from Ohio State. Ollie Gordon, who was like a Heisman favorite going into the year, who's now like running back 11 on the board. It's mind-boggling how talented this running back class is. And when I look at the deal that Elijah Mitchell signed, I look at Kareem Hunt's deal, 1 year, $2.5 million. Isaiah Pacheco is making seventh-round pick money. I still think you go after a running back. especially with the other moves that you've made to kind of shore up some positions and make them less of a need where you can attack it from a best player available sort of standpoint. Absolutely. I still think you take a running back, even with Kareem Hunt coming back, even with the Elijah Mitchell signing.
I think a lot of fans, fan reactions that we saw all over social media and Twitter, kind of from the initial Elijah Mitchell signing, people were trying to figure out, why is this? Hopefully this is not your, what you're banking on as a Kansas City Chiefs to really impact your running back group. He's very injury prone. I mean, he's had a good NFL career, but he's a vet. Okay. He brings in that veteran mentality, but he's not the guy that you were looking for. Okay. Then obviously people were kind of down on Pacheco from last year because he came back from a broken leg and just didn't, you know, I personally still believe that he came back a little too soon because he wanted to play, and I get it, but I'm 100% with you. I'm 100% on board. If I'm making super future predictions, I don't see Elijah Mitchell making the roster. I believe that Kareem Hunt, great. You want to shore up somebody that knows your system. He's been there. Pacheco, another guy. You've got him for another year. Keep him in the system. He definitely can be a great change of pace guy. I fully believe they are going to go after somebody in the draft. I would be surprised if the Chiefs get through all their picks and there is not a running back on the board, especially not in the top four rounds.
Yes, I would agree. I mean, 31 would be a stretch, although admittedly, and this is coming from somebody who despises the prospect or the idea of a running back in round one. But if Omarion Hampton is the best player on the board at 31, I would not be super disappointed if that were to happen. And that's coming from somebody who hates the idea of taking a running back in the first. But when you're sitting there at 63 in the second, or you're sitting there at 66 or 67, whatever that pick is they got from the Titans there in the early third, sure, why not? Why not take a run at a Quinshon Judkins there late round two, early round three, or even Caleb Johnson if you wanted to go there, although I was fairly disappointed with his combine performance, although that's not the end all be all. So that was kind of an interesting story. And again, I feel like the one guy we keep forgetting about when we're all having these conversations, where does Carson Steele fit in this entire equation? Honestly, I don't think he should be a part of the equation. That's no knock on him, but he's a fullback. I think at heart, I think that's where his position designation goes to in the National Football League. And he did have some ball security issues during the start of his career in Kansas City, beginning in the preseason and then early on into the regular season. There were some concerns around him fumbling the football. So, but I think that it's an interesting name that I feel like is getting left out quite a bit in this, in that, okay, you sign Elijah Mitchell, you signed Kareem Hunt back, you've still got Pacheco, I still think you go after a running back in the draft. Where does Carson Steele factor into this entire equation? Or is he out and about looking for an NFL team to land with coming up here by the time we reach mini camp, training camp, and the start of the season?
I don't think so. I think he's definitely the weird thing is he's not really part of the equation because, like you said, he is a designated, they have him designated as a fullback. So they can kind of get away with him not being on that running back roster. And what they really do is they love him in a special teams role because he is very good at special teams. Now, yeah, ball security was an issue, but he's also a rookie. As long as he can gain the trust back of everybody, obviously they saw him. We saw the Chiefs use him down the line in the season. And I think he's still got a lot to learn. Obviously he was fresh. You know, he had good college reps. Maybe the numbers didn't pop off the page, but we saw what he could do in the preseason games. We saw a little bit of flash here and there during the regular season, but special teams, he really excelled. And the Chiefs love guys who can be dual threats, who can play their primary position and be a great special teams competitor. So I think that he's going to be a guy that they're going to not really want to get rid of. Because who you really going to – he can play the fullback position well. I like when they go – they had that not really wing T, but kind of that three-back set where they used him, Worthy, and Pacheco at one point. And I think that's dangerous to look at as well. Now, obviously, that's not an every-down thing, but I think he's definitely part of the equation. And I don't think his roster spot is in too much danger.
I look at him as a – more functional version of Sherman that they had at fullback for all those years. And they didn't even use the fullback this year. They didn't really use a fullback at all last year. I think maybe if you want to go back and try to reestablish the running game a little bit more, then keep him on the roster and let him play fullback. But a fullback who you honestly believe can run the football and can catch passes out of the backfield, right? A Kyle Juszczyk type, right? More so than your generic kind of fullback. So that one's kind of interesting. Yeah, DJ Giddens was who I was talking about earlier out of Kansas State. Somebody mentioned him in the text line, 913-586-7965. Said he's a relative local kid from Junction City, Kansas. I don't want to be this guy, but does everybody remember the last time that the Chiefs drafted a relatively local guy who went to college at Kansas State? He hasn't really played all that much in a position where the Chiefs have really needed guys out of there, and that Felix Anudike Uzama. So I don't know. Again, like I mentioned at the start of the show, Mizzou basketball is in action right now over on the SEC Network. Mizzou taking on Florida for a trip to the semifinal round of the SEC tournament. Blake, what's the update, man? What's going on right now?
All right. Update on Mizzou versus Florida. Mizzou got off to a little slow start here. It looks like they're having some problems, as you mentioned earlier. Mark Mitchell not starting tonight. He's obviously one of their top-tier players, but they did get a big posterizing dunk just now from Trent Pierce, which looks like it might up the energy a little bit. So they are down 10-2 right now, but only about 3 minutes in at the 17 mark. So we'll check back in here in a little bit, see how they're doing.
All right, sounds good. Somebody else on the text line, a 913, said, L-Dub, don't forget about R.J. Harvey. That's our running back. Are you referencing R.J. Harvey from UCF, who came into the combine at 5'8", 205 pounds? He ran a 4.440, not bad, but his vertical was a 38, which is still solid. Broad jump was 10.7. His 20-yard shuttle was a 4.34, and he put up 16 reps at the combine. His athleticism score among all running backs at the combine was 16th. So he's undersized. He's not one of the more athletic running backs in this draft class, at least according to the combine numbers. I'm not sold on R.J. Harvey, but you know, maybe this person is a UCF fan. I don't know, but I'm not entirely sold. I think there's a lot better options in this draft class.
I personally like the Trayvon Henderson option if he's there. But as Bink pointed out about 2 weeks ago, Brett Veach does not like to take Ohio State guys. And I don't know if there's some personal beef that he's got with Ohio State. He just doesn't do it. But that's a guy that could be right in that little niche area, right in the hot zone where you could take him if he falls to you. And I think nobody would be mad at that.
No, absolutely not. And I cannot remember his name off the top of my head, but the kid out of Virginia Tech who ran like the 4.32 40 or something. He's, again, a fairly undersized. I don't know if he's an every down back, but I know there's a lot of Chiefs fans who have been talking about getting a home run hitter at the running back position again, right? A guy that's plays a little bit like Jamal Charles did, where he was a speedster and a guy that could just go and make a play. He could turn a 10-yard gain into a 40-yard gain, right? I just don't see, and somebody mentions Devin Neal again. I'm just not sold on Devin Neal. I'm not super sold on him. He came in a little bit smaller than some of the other backs at the combine. He ran a 4.6 at 40 time at the combine. So again, not elite speed, not elite size. It's questionable. I mean, he's 3 or 4 inches shorter and weighs about 10 pounds less than Caleb Johnson. And they ran relatively the same 40. So, I don't know. Somebody said, how do you feel about Cam Scataboo? I don't know. He wouldn't run at the combine. That's pretty telling to me.
Every other back ran.
He would not run the 40 at the NFL combine because I think he was terrified of what that number was going to look like. That really sold me even further down on the Cam Scataboo hype train.
I think, and I didn't mean to cut you off there, but I think his gameplay is one of those things where he wanted his film to speak for himself. And I do agree with you. I think his number, because people put a lot on the numbers at the 40. And if he didn't think that his 40 was going to live up to it, but there's a difference between game speed and 40 speed. There really is. I mean, you could be real fast in the 40 and not any good. Shout out John Ross.
Fair point. Yeah.
Top pick.
And I,
one
and
of
I'll
the fastest
say this.
Times of all time. And you could be slow, but you could be fast on the field. It's just, it's how you play the game. And so, yeah, that, I think that did raise some eyebrows, but I'm a big Cam Scadaboo fan. We were just talking about that back here with Jason, but.
And I'll say this for Cam Scadaboo, right? He doesn't wow me the way that some of these other running backs in this draft class do, but that dude runs hard as hell. I mean, he is not afraid to put his head down and just run through somebody. He's the kind of guy where I don't think he's physically capable of handling an NFL workload as a starter for 8 to 10 years in this league. I don't think he has that kind of longevity, but I would not be terrified to see that guy in the first 3 or 4 years of his career get 20 to 25 touches. I think that physically, with the way he runs the ball, I think he can handle it. But I think with that level of physicality, eventually your body starts weighing you down a little bit. Unless you're Derrick Henry. Unless you are this Greek God-level specimen running the way that he runs. I don't know. Lance in the text line said, I would like to see the Chiefs draft Dylan Sampson. And again, Sampson's one of those that he was phenomenal at the goal line for Tennessee. I think he had like 19 or 20 rushing touchdowns for the Volunteers last year on their way to a college football playoff berth. He had a great year. He's not the tallest guy, 5'8", 200 pounds. Didn't run the 40 at the combine, which again makes me a little bit nervous in some respects. He participated in other stuff. He went through the vertical, which he had a 35, which isn't the most explosive for a back. His broad jump was a 10-4. Again, not enormously explosive. And he only put up 13 reps on the bench, which is also not great. I don't know. But again, there are so many options available for the Chiefs at running back. I still think they'll take one. I also think the Chiefs will take a defensive tackle. The Chiefs will probably take one here in April. And that is despite the fact that the Chiefs made a signing today, picking up an interior defensive lineman, and we'll talk about that coming up next here on the program, After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber alongside Blake Schneiders, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks, Eats, Drinks, Scenic Views, on your home for Kansas City sports, 96.5 The Fan.
Well, Chiefs fans, get ready to learn a new name. Chiefs made another free agent signing today, and a guy that's fairly familiar with the Chiefs in a respect. They picked up a defensive tackle, Jerry Tillery, who was with the Vikings this past season, but was a 2019 first round pick of the Chargers. So he's familiar with the Chiefs. He's familiar with the AFC West. The 28-year-old played almost 500 snaps for the Vikings last year. And, I mean, he didn't wow you. 500 snaps, he did not record a single sack. He had 17 pressures, 2 pass breakups, and a forced fumble. He had a... According to Pro Football Focus, of the 89 interior defensive linemen that played at least 400 snaps last year, he was ranked 74th out of 89 with a Pro Football Focus grade of 50.2. I don't know. I mean, it's a depth piece, right? Again, I think this goes hand in hand with the re-signing of Kareem Hunt today. This does not mean that the Chiefs are all of a sudden not going to take a defensive tackle, because they absolutely are. Tillery, you know, came out of Notre Dame. He had much acclaim to him, 28th overall pick, and has recorded 12 and a half sacks in 6 seasons, playing in 96 combined games. His career high in tackles, his best season in the league was in 2021. He played a little bit of defensive end. He played some defensive tackle. He had 51 total tackles that year and 4.5 sacks. He finished with 6 TFLs and 14 quarterback hits. But like I said, the last couple of years, it's been more on the downturn. Last year with the Vikings, he had 28 tackles, no sacks. He accomplished 1 single tackle for loss in almost 500 snaps. This is a depth piece. This is not the guy that I see playing next to Chris Jones on a snap-by-snap basis next season. I just don't see it happening. I still think they're going to go after a D-tackle, but with the loss of Tershawn Wharton, they needed guys that could just be bodies, that could give a Chris Jones a breather, that could give a D-tackle that you take in late round one or into round two a little bit of a reprieve when they need it. This is a sort of under the radar, not much to see here kind of signing by the Chiefs. This is just a body with NFL experience to put on the 53-man roster. Nothing more.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think he's going to, you know, this wasn't the marquee signing for an interior lineman, but I think the reason that they like him is because he's clearly been able to show that he can play inside and out.
Mm-hmm.
Inside line, outside line. They know they like to move pieces around. They like that with Mike Dana as well. He could go in and out playing D-tackle and on the edge. So it's just, like you said, it's going to be one of those depth pieces. If he's comfortable, you can mix a lot of guys around. And really, you're just trying to find the best matchup for Chris Jones. So if you can bring him in as a D-tackle and bump Chris Jones out, boom, there you go. So yeah, that's what it's going to be.
I agree. 913-586-7965 is our number. And 816 in the text line just asked, is it almost guaranteed that the Chiefs go after a wide receiver and a running back in the first three rounds of the draft? No, I don't believe it is. I think that with the signings that the Chiefs have made, with bringing Hollywood Brown back, with re-signing Kareem Hunt, with picking up Elijah Mitchell, picking up Tillery today, and, you know, re-signing Nick Bolton, I think that Brett Veach is putting this roster together where they can go into the draft in April with a best player available mindset. It's who's at the top of our board. It isn't, okay, well, you know, we really need a running back here, and I know that we don't really want to take a running back at 63, but we're afraid that somebody's going to pick up a Marion Hampton here or whoever their guy is. And so they're going to potentially have to reach to fill a need. And now that you have put some of these pieces in place, although they may not be the pieces that you want for a 17-game regular season coming up next year, it wouldn't be the end of the world if that was the case. You would be willing to avoid reaching on a pick to take the best player available. And that might end up being taking Luther Burden at 31 and taking Amarion Hampton at 66 or 67 or whatever that pick from the Titans is. It might end up being that, but it could very well be they're sitting there at 31 and they're looking at Josh Connerly out of Oregon, or by some strange happenstance after his combine performance, somehow Armon Membo ends up cascading down a draft board and the Chiefs are sitting there at 31 like, yeah, I know we signed Jalen Moore to a 2-year deal, but Juwan Taylor's probably out after this season because they have to keep him around because of the contract he's got for the next 2 years. But after this season's over with, and if you feel that strongly about Armon Membo and you don't want to risk having to wait until 63 when he absolutely wouldn't be there, not that I think he'll be there at 31, then you take that guy. If there is some edge rusher that you believe is wildly undervalued and you think he's going to be a dog, you can do that. You're not penciled in to you have to take a guy at this position at this spot based on the way this roster is currently constructed. That's the way I look at it. 785 just said, maybe you answered this, but why are we always trying to piecemeal left tackle and not go get a real one? We need a really good left tackle and we're going to start an O-line that's never aged left tackle. I'm not sure what that means. Why are we doing this and wasting years of Patrick's prime? I think it's a multifold approach. Problem is, I think that they have had a really hard time finding that guy. I think they thought for a time that Orlando Brown Jr. was going to be that guy. And then Orlando Brown Jr. said, I want X amount of dollars. They looked at the amount of zeros on the end of that check and were like, I don't think so. That's a lot. I mean, we got to pay Pat and we have to pay Travis and we got to pay Chris and we got to do right. It's one position out of 24 that start a football game, 11 on offense, 11 on defense, kicker, punter. Like it's one of 53 players on a roster. And I know how important left tackle is. I will not argue that. I think left tackle might be the third most important position in sports, or not in sports, but in the game of football. The quarterback position obviously is number one. the middle linebacker position or whoever is wearing the helmet or the helmet with the mic on defense, which most of the time is the middle backer, and then the left tackle, because the guy who has the hardest job protecting the most important position on the field then inadvertently becomes a very important position, right? As much as we all, looking back on it now, realize at the time it was happening, most of us could not stand Eric Fisher. A lot of people thought he was terrible when he was in Kansas City. He retires, and we're all sitting here like the biggest Eric Fisher apologists on planet Earth, like, oh, if only we could get an Eric Fisher-like guy back at this point. You thought you had a good replacement in Orlando Brown. He became too expensive. You picked up Kingsley Suamataia in round two last year, who wowed you with his athleticism and his strength. I mean, he's got one of the highest bench press scores at the combine ever. He just wasn't ready yet. And I think the Chiefs, they rushed him and then they didn't give him enough time to figure it out. And it stunted everything. It was, I hearken back to, and again, I don't have a more recent example for the Royals necessarily, but during my time in Springfield, I covered the St. Louis and Springfield Cardinals a lot, and they had a prospect that was, a phenomenal prospect, top five prospect in baseball. They called him up way too early. He struggled. Then they sent him back down to Memphis. It sent him back down to AAA, like 50 games into the year. And here's the crazy, but he was hitting like 270, and they sent him back down, and it killed him. He came back last year and he hit like 210, and it just derailed his entire career. Jordan Walker, look him up. Phenomenal talent, but it's killed his development. And I think the Chiefs did something similar with Kingsley Suamataia. Now, was it the right move collectively for the team's best chances of winning? Yes, I would agree it was. But for his long-term prospects as a tackle, I think it pretty much killed it. That's why we're going to guard. And they wanted Ronnie Stanley. They thought he could be the long-term fix. Ravens nipped that in the bud pretty quick. And Alaric Jackson went back to LA for $16 million a year. And there's a come to Jesus meeting there. Like, do we want to pay Cam Robinson $17 or $18 million a year if that's what Alaric Jackson's making? Do we want to pay Jedrick Wills $15 or $16 million a year, something comparable with Alaric Jackson? Okay, let's go get Jalen Moore. 2 years, 20. He had decent enough numbers. He's been sitting behind Trent Williams of the San Francisco 49ers for the last 3 or 4 years. In terms of the tackle position in modern football, there's no better person to learn the left tackle position from than Trent Williams. And he's got pretty good athleticism at that position as well. So I get what you're asking about piecemealing that left tackle position, and I'm hoping that someday they can figure it out. But I just think more so than anything else, the money just didn't work, and where this organization is right now, it's about putting the best possible player in that spot to win rather than developing a player. I think Kingsley Suamataia may become a very serviceable tackle at some point in his career, but they did not have the opportunity to do that this year to let him develop, to let him go through the growing pains. They're not a 7-10 or a 6-11 football team. This was a team that went 14-3 and got the one seed in the AFC. Like, they could not afford to let their left tackle go through the hiccups that a rookie left tackle needs to go through. It's just the way the cards have been dealt for this Chiefs team. Is you're really, really good. You can't afford to just be like, all right, rookie, go out there and figure it out. Give up 3 sacks a game and we'll see how it goes. They couldn't do that. It killed his development.
Well, and really just kind of highlight the history that you've just laid out there. If you don't remember, the reason Chiefs were able to go get Eric Fisher is because they were coming off, I believe, a 2-14 season. So they had the draft pick at number one to get him. The Chiefs have been in the AFC Championship game or the Super Bowl every year for the last 6 years, 6 out of 7 years. So their draft position does not allow. I mean, top tackles, when you want to go after top tackles, they're going to be in the top 15 guys. You're not going to get a top tackle that's going to drop down to a 31, 32 pick. That's just the way the cookie crumbles at that point. But if you remember, like you said, they did try to go get Orlando Brown. They got Orlando Brown. Then he outpriced himself. They actually did try to go after Trent Williams. Trent Williams, it came down to the Chiefs and somebody else or staying with the 49ers. 49ers anteed up that money because they were able to pay him because they already had him. the Chiefs have just not been in the market. Like you also said, they went after Staley. It just, they haven't had all the right pieces, and with all the money going to other people, they're just not in a competitive market to pay a top-tier tackle, not top-tier money. So you have to go through the draft, or you got to pick up the next best thing, which is why I'm not mad at all about this Moore pick.
No, I'm not either. I mean, for no other reason than, like, we know who the guy is, right? I think that was another part of last year. We didn't know who the guy was. Is it Kingsley? Is it Wanye Morris? Is it DJ Humphreys now that we've signed him? Oh, nope. I guess maybe it's not. DJ Humphreys is a little banged up. Okay, I guess it's Joe Tooney. Is it going to continue to be Joe? Every week we were asking ourselves, is Joe Tooney going to start at left tackle again this week? And every week it was a Friday or an early Saturday morning. Andy Reid's like, yep, we're going with Joe Tooney. Before that, we had no idea. So there was a lot of upheaval in the organization. I'm just thrilled with the fact that we know who it's going to be. Barring an injury, Jalen Moore is going to start at left tackle every game for the Chiefs in the next 2 years, or at least next year. Maybe if you draft a tackle in this draft and you really like him, then maybe Jalen Moore can move over to right tackle next year after you inevitably cut Jawan Taylor, because you're not going to pay him $20 million a year next year in 2026. There's just no way. 913-586-7965. Much more to get to tonight on the program, including a former Triple Crown winning wide receiver who is staying in the division. We'll talk about that next here on After Hours. Logan Weber alongside Blake Schneiders on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Well, I tell you what, we're going to have a quarterback battle in Kansas City. Sorry, let me clarify. Backup quarterback battle in Kansas City. After Hours on 96.5 The Fan. Logan Weber here with you, my producer for tonight's show, Blake Schneiders. Yeah, so yesterday, the Chiefs pick up Gardner Minshew, presumably to be their backup quarterback. And then today, they announced that they're signing Bailey Zappe again, who was on the practice squad for the first couple of weeks last year and then ended up with the Browns. I don't really know why. I think on paper, Gardner Minshew should obviously be your backup quarterback. I mean, I want to go so far as to say he's this generation's Ryan Fitzpatrick among quarterbacks, but he's like somewhere along those lines of like a backup quarterback who's just going to go in there and just sling it. He's just going to go out there and play football, man. He's going to wear his jorts to mini camp, which is going to be great. Fits right in with that Midwest style. I'm sure there's a lot of middle-aged dads that are going to very much approve of the jean shorts look that Gardner Minshew is going to bring to the table.
Oh, he's Uncle Rico,
man. Uncle Rico stash. Yeah, I mean, he's killing. He's going to throw a football over them there mountains is what he's going to do.
About a quarter mile. Throw that pigskin.
Oh, but, yeah, I was surprised when I saw this news. I'm like, why? Yeah, you just signed Minshew, so I guess it's going to just be a quarterback battle between Zappe and Minshew. Whoever wins the backup job is presumably... If Minshew wins the job, then Zappe's going to end up on the practice squad again before he inevitably ends up being signed off the Chiefs practice squad for some quarterback needy team that needs a quarterback. I don't know. It's kind of an interesting one.
I mean, 2 years ago, was it 2 years ago? He did lead the Colts to the playoffs.
Yeah, he was with the Patriots there for a while. Remember when him and Mac Jones were having their battle, him and Bailey Zappe? Or are you talking about Gardner Minshew?
I'm talking about Minshew.
Yes.
My apologies.
Yes, Gardner Minshew. Of course, he probably had his best year with the Jags when he was there in Jacksonville. And he's a fun guy to watch. He's an interesting quarterback. One of those dudes that, like, you legitimately have no idea what he's going to do. Like, on any given play, you are sitting there wondering... The moment that you realize it's a pass, oh God, what's Minshew going to do here? This is going to get interesting. Yeah, I mean, his best years were definitely his time in Jacksonville. His rookie year in 2019, he threw 21 touchdowns to 6 picks. And then his second year in the league, he threw 16 touchdowns to 5. And then became kind of a backup for 2 years in Philly. And then went to the Colts for a year. Here's what I don't see. This is the problem I have with the Pro Bowl now in the NFL. He made the Pro Bowl that year. Technically, played in 17 games. He started 13. The Colts went 7-6. He threw 15 touchdown passes to 9 interceptions and made the Pro Bowl. What? What is that? How? How do you have 15 touchdowns in a 17-game season and you're not a running back or a wide receiver and you make the Pro Bowl? I got no respect for the Pro Bowl anymore. That and the fact that Trent McDuffie has been a two-time All-Pro now and has never made the Pro Bowl. Never get.
That's a different discussion we can have another day or maybe later about the watering down of the Pro Bowl and how it doesn't mean as much anymore.
It's unbelievable.
Or as exciting as it ever was.
That is a fact. I think first thing you do is you move it after the Super Bowl again.
Agreed.
Move it back to after the Super Bowl. Let the guys who are competing in the Super Bowl get back to being able to compete in the Super Bowl. I think that that was when it was at its best. 913-586-7965. Somebody in the text line is 620 says a great backup, thousands of yards instead of hundreds. Oh, yeah, very serviceable backup. I would agree. And that's kind of the intrigue behind Gardner Minshew. And that's what Andy Reid likes. Andy Reid likes to have two good quarterbacks in the room. We've heard him say it over and over again, right? It was Alex Smith and it was Pat. And then when Patrick Mahomes took over as the starter, it was Matt Moore there for a while. And then it was Chad Henne. And then it was, it was Blaine Gabbert. And then this past year, it was Carson Wentz. And now you go to Gardner Minshew. And Minshew's a little bit younger than those guys. He's 29, 30. So presumably he could be your backup for a while if you do that. Who knows? And then Zappe, I don't know. Somebody said, could Minshew be trade bait for a desperate team? I don't know why you would keep another quarterback on the roster that long for that, because I'm not sure he's practice squad eligible. Zappe, if he ends up on the practice squad, somebody's going to pick him up. He's proven that he's not a star quarterback. He's not a great quarterback by any means. Probably not even a good quarterback. But I mean, he beat out Mac Jones for a job. He could give you spurts if you need it. I don't know. I can't believe I just spent 10 minutes talking about a backup quarterback situation with the Kansas City Chiefs. Again, 913-586-7965. Much more to get to here on tonight's program, including a Hall of Fame induction upcoming for the Kansas City Royals. We'll talk about that next here on After Hours. Logan Weber and Blake Schneiders on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5, The Fan.
Cooper Kupp is a Seattle Seahawk. Can't say I saw that coming, but that's what's going down. According to ESPN's Adam Schefter, Kupp going to the Seahawks, 3 years, $45 million. So you cut Tyler Lockett, you traded DK Metcalf, and now you're going to give Cooper Kupp $15 million a year. He's 31 years old, and he has had some great years in the NFL. Will not argue that, right? I mean, the coup de grace, of course, was that 2021 season where he picked up the receiving triple crown. 145 catches, 1,900 receiving yards, 16 receiving touchdowns. He was All-Pro first team. He was the Offensive Player of the Year that year. He finished third in the MVP voting as a receiver, which is astonishing. But he has not had a 1,000-yard season since. Played in 9 games in 2022, played in 12 games in 2023, and this past year he played in 12 games, started 11. Last year with the Rams, he had 67 grabs for 710 yards and 6 touchdowns. And you're going to pay him $15 million a year? If Cooper Kupp can return to that form that we saw from him 2019, 2020, 2021, sure. But based on the last 3 years of his production, he should not be making more money than DeAndre Hopkins is this year. Like how the Ravens got DeAndre Hopkins for $6 million, which could go up to $8 million, and the Seahawks are paying Cooper Kupp $15 million a year. I'm not sure I understand the logic behind this move, if I'm being honest. I don't get it. Cooper Kupp's a great player, but injuries have baffled his entire career. He has played a full season in the NFL once. Once. He's been in the league for 8 years. 15 games, 8 games, 16 games, 15 games, 17 games in 2021, his best year. 9, 12, 11. So it's almost a guarantee that he's going to miss time at some point. His explosiveness, his level of production has dipped in the last 3 years. Now, if he would have had that 1,900-yard season last year, and then this year he's dealing with injuries, okay, I see it. But the sample size is large enough. That's a 3-year stretch there where he has missed a total of 20 games. That I find highly questionable if I'm from the Seattle Seahawks, especially after you just cut Tyler Lockett and then traded DK Metcalf, and now you want to pair him alongside Jackson Smith and Jigba, which makes some sense, but even pairing him with Puka Nacua didn't help him avoid the injury issues that he was going with in LA. I don't know.
I think what the Seahawks thought was, hey, we're getting rid of Metcalf, got a second round draft pick in return for him. Okay, so we got some capital in the draft. Go get a guy that's still serviceable. And then did they overpay him a little bit? I'll let the peanut gallery decide on that. But it's a guy that can come in and maybe kind of help in Jigba, where maybe Metcalf couldn't, or maybe Lockett couldn't, just in the veteran aspect of mentoring young guys. So I can see it. I mean, I don't think it's a totally boneheaded move. You know, did not have that on my bingo card, though, for him going to the Seahawks.
No, I did not. But from his perspective, it makes a lot of sense. He's a Washington kid, born and raised in Yakima. He went to Eastern Washington University, which is in Cheney, Washington. Cheney, I don't know how to pronounce that. It's spelled like Dick Cheney, C-H-E-N-E-Y. So I'm going with Cheney.
I think you're right.
And he's going home, so to speak. So that's a cool story for him. What this will look like over the next couple of years for the Seahawks, only time will tell. 913-586-7965. Stick around. We've got a new Hall of Famer going into the Royals Ring of Honor, Hall of Honor, whatever you want to call it. We'll discuss that coming up next right here on After Hours on 96.5 The Fan.
You're listening to After Hours, brought to you by Twin Peaks. Eats, drinks, scenic views on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.